But I'm glad to be here today. I'm going to tell you a story over the next 45 to 50 minutes. But before I tell you my story, I want to start with this phrase. It's a phrase I learned while working in Southern Africa. I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but loosely translated, it's a proverb, which loosely translated means people are people through other people. So I never present myself in any way professionally or any kind of way until I first thank the people that make me who I am. First and foremost, my family. This is an old photo. They won't let me be in them anymore. But especially to my mother and father. I'm a biologist, and without Romeo and Susie Hayes, of course, I would not be here, literally. And to my wife, Catherine Kim, for her love and support. And without her, my son and my daughter wouldn't be here. So I want to thank on my family, again, first and foremost. My son and my daughter, who I just showed you. This is a... It's also an old photo. It's junior prom pictures. Yeah, it's those proud dad moments. You know, I don't know which made me prouder, that my son borrowed my tie for his prom, or that my daughter borrowed my earrings for her prom. They were both. After 18 years of no daddy's earrings and two grown up for you, she finally got to do it, and both made me proud. I want to thank my funding sources, among many, Beyond Pesticides, who saved my you-know-what in the last couple years. And also, this is a disclosure. I have been funded by Novartis, Syngenta, EcoRisk, the chemical industry, which now no longer wants to hang out with me, but that's all right. What's the phrase? If you're not pissing somebody off, then you're probably not doing anything important. Those people make me feel really important. I want to thank all the students that have been involved, and everybody in blue is an undergraduate. I had an incredible undergraduate experience myself, and I'm doing my best to try to give that back. So these people, and including these people right now, which again, I won't call the names, but Jay will recognize every name on here. These people now can eat and pay rent because of Beyond Pesticides and do the work that I'm going to describe to you today. So, and there are a couple guys, they just didn't show up for the photo. So, one of the other things that's important is that many of the students on this photograph, many of the students that I've worked with, were themselves the children of migrant farm workers and farm workers, and so come to the lab with a very unique perspective, and I've been very happy that I've been able to integrate and work with the community in that way. And finally, I want to dedicate this to my grandmother, who in addition to many, many things, before she passed on herself, she passed on to me her love of education and her desire to make the world a better place. And I'm forever thankful for that. She also taught me something along with my father that's very important. She taught me if you want to get a point across, if you have information you want to spread to people, don't preach, don't teach, don't lecture, don't present, don't give talks. Just tell a good story. And that's what I want to do today. I want to tell you my story. My story starts and ends, first and foremost, with a little boy who likes frogs. I've been shown this slide for 22 years. My mother sent me this book when my son was born, 22 years ago, as she wrote a note in there. She said, "This was your dad's favorite book." I don't remember the book. No, my mama don't lie. And she says it's my favorite book. It was my favorite book. What I remember is I've been trying to answer this question, what is a frog? What does it mean to be a frog? For as long as I can remember. And normally when I give this talk, I give you the whole 48 years of my life, but we're short on time tonight. So I'm going to skip ahead to a childhood dream, for as long as I can remember, in addition to liking frogs, I always wanted to go to Africa. I wasn't thinking about pesticides, any stuff we'll talk about tonight. I remember folding out the pages of National Geographic magazines. I remember watching National Geographic and Wild Kingdom. It came on every Sunday at 7:30. And I remember dreaming of going to this magical place. And it was, for me as a child, truly a dream. I never got on an airplane until I went to college. It was out of the realm of possibility. And as a graduate student, I finally got to go to Africa. Not only did I get to go to Africa with that beard, National Geographic paid for it. I got to be in the magazine, I got to be in the show, I got to be in a Toyota commercial. You can Google it. It's called Remarkable Men Drive Remarkable Toyotas. So literally, though, this was a dream come true. I literally got to become that guy that I dreamed about as a little kid. And I started working in a place on the coast here called the Arabuku Sokoke. And one of the cool things about going to Africa is you get to say words like Arabuku Sokoke. How many of you have ever had the opportunity to say Arabuku Sokoke? Let's see, there you go. So I started working in the Arabuku Sokoke, and I got introduced to this fabulous beast, Hyperoleus Argus. Doesn't even have a common name. That's how little known it was. And what interested me, as little boys who like frogs become interested in, was that it was just really pretty. And the males and females looked like they didn't belong to each other. They looked like completely different species. And I became fascinated by this, and I brought some of these animals back to the university. And we started a colony, and we discovered, so this is the same individual photographed once a day for 6 days, we discovered that they all metamorphose green. And then you're wondering, what does this got to do with pesticides? You should see the looks when I go give talks at breast cancer conferences. Like, why is this guy here? But we discovered, you'll see in a minute, we discovered that they all start out green, but the females change color at puberty, at sexual maturity. And so we hypothesized that hormones might be involved. And we hypothesized specifically that estrogens might be involved because the females only change color. So just like in humans, when little girls reach puberty, estrogen makes them grow breasts, we hypothesized it when these frogs reach puberty, estrogen makes them change color. And then we tested them in a very simple way. We just dipped the frogs in hormone solutions. So we dipped them in testosterone, the male hormone, nothing happened. We dipped them in estrogen, they started to change color. Now I should point out that this is where things get weird, in case you're wondering. Because I was, here's a species, Hyperoleus argus. So I was giving this talk on my color-changing frogs on February 15th, 1993. And I remember the date exactly because it was the day before my son was born. And my wife was in the audience, and I'm talking about my color-changing frog. My wife goes into labor, so I have to leave the talk. It's 100% true story. I don't make stuff up. My wife goes into labor, so we're driving down the highway to go back to Oakland where my son was born, and my wife, between contractions, says, you should patent that frog. And I thought it was a crazy hormone stuff talk. I said, you can't patent a frog. But she called her brother up, and he said, oh, you can patent a frog. You're too poor to be referred to. He's a lawyer. And so we did. We called it the Hyperoleus argus indica screen, or the hey sis. And here's why you patent a frog. Here's a control, unexposed animal, they all start out green. If we give them estradiol, the estrogen that's in every vertebrate animal, if you're a female, if you're a reproductively mature female, doesn't matter if you're a frog, a dog, a cat, a hog, or a human, you have this hormone. If we give them ethinyl estradiol, the estrogen that's in birth control pill, they'll change color. We gave them DES, which you heard about this morning, a pharmaceutical estrogen, they changed color. We gave them DDT, which you heard about this morning, is an endocrine disrupting estrogen mimic, they changed color. And in fact, I did this work with Nigel Noriega, one of my first PhD students who was formerly an undergraduate with Lou Gillette. So there was some Lou Gillette influence happening. So we screened dozens of compounds and we showed that every estrogenic compound that made my frog change color was also known to promote breast cancer. So we had a little frog that we could screen, we could dip our frog in chemicals, and if they changed color, we knew that that was a potential breast cancer promoter. In fact, you could send me some of your water, I'd get my frog and it changed color, I'd be like, well, you might not want to drink that water. Not only that, we showed that if you give these frogs tamoxifen, we could block them, we could prevent them from changing color, and tamoxifen was the pharmaceutical at the time used to block estrogen and treat breast cancer. So we could not only use this African frog to identify compounds that might promote cancer, but we could use this little frog, which we could raise by the tens of thousands, to test chemicals that then might go on to be used in the treatment of breast cancer. Okay, now if that's not weird enough, here's where it gets really weird. Because remember, I'm just a little boy who likes frogs. I just want to know why the frogs change color. So we patented that just because it seemed like a cool thing to do. And then little boy who likes frogs gets introduced to some grown-up words. And grown-up words always come in twos, don't they? In this case, the grown-up word was intellectual property. The university says, yeah, that's a good idea. And if you don't find a way to make money on it, we're going to sell it. I don't want anybody to sell my frog. So my wife and I set up this company called Sokoke, named after the Arabuku Sokoke, where the frog comes from. And we got a customer, little company called Novartis. Really? I'm being obnoxious. The biggest chemical company in the world says, we want you to study atrazine. Here's atrazine. I'm not a chemist, but if you want to see it, here it is. In fact, chemistry almost got me kicked out of college. It was so nice, I had to take it twice. But here's what it looks like. I never heard of it. We're joined in the carbon bond. Now, if you Google Tyrone, you get atrazine. If you Google atrazine, you get Tyrone. Google it. It's an herbicide. It's a weed killer. In case you don't know, it's been used since 1958. We use 80 million pounds in the United States. At the time, it was the number one selling pesticide. And when I say pesticide, I mean anything that kills a pest. It was the number one selling pesticide in the world. So it was a big deal. It's used in more than 80, actually, I should say 60 countries, because now it's outlawed in all of Europe. Now, let me clarify, because I'm on camera. This slide is inaccurate. So says the company's lawyer. The compound has not been outlawed in all of Europe, they say. They say it has been denied regulatory approval by the European Union. I don't know what the difference is, but I know that this wording pisses them off. So that's the slide that I keep up there. That's just the kind of brother I am. So they asked us, the company, they said, we want you to look at the African clawed frogs and if it's labeled. Who's ever heard of the African clawed frog? Because everybody, as we say back home, everybody uses this frog in developmental biology. Who knows why? I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you because you already know. Turns out in 1920, somebody discovered that the human pregnancy hormone, the hormone that you make when you're pregnant, makes this frog lay eggs. So by 1940, this frog was the pregnancy. I'm not joking, this frog was the pregnancy. If you thought you were pregnant, you would go to the doctor, and they would inject some urine into the frog, and if the frog laid eggs, you were either happy or sad, depending on your situation.